Welcome to the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast, where we go inside what makes a coach a coach.
You don't even think about being in the Hall of Fame. You know, you think that's for people like Bill Russell and John Wooden. And I feel really lucky because I'm still coaching. Usually by the time you get in there, you're done. So I'm pretty happy to still be coaching too.
The Guardians of the Game podcast is a production of the National Association of Basketball Coaches and IMG, and is brought to you by Wilson Sporting Goods. And now your host, Coach Dave Odom.
Welcome to the new season of the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast. Today's guest is the head coach of the Syracuse Orange, Jim Boeheim. Jim, welcome to you, to the podcast this year. We had a lot of fun with it last year. I think it's going to be even better this year. I was looking at your bio summary before I called you this morning. The fact that you and I have been friends for 35, 40 years, even I didn't realize the bio that you have accumulated in all of your years up at Syracuse. Let me just run down a couple of the things. This will be your 43rd year as the head coach at Syracuse. You came there as a player. You and Dave Bing teamed up. You had some great teams. Roy Danforth's your coach. As a head coach, you guided the Syracuse Orangemen through the Big East several years. I know that was kind of a love affair that you had with that group, the coaches up there, Roley and John Thompson and the others. And then in 2013, the Orange decided to make the jump to the ACC. Tell us a little bit about the difference between the Big East and the ACC, if there was any that was distinguishable.
You know, I think it's very comparable. At the time, the Big East kind of exploded on the scene and became one of the top two or three conferences in the country. Arguably, you could say the top conference in two or three or four years there. But the ACC is very comparable. It's probably the top conference in college basketball based on, you know, everybody argues these things, but based on what's been done in the tournament the last few years, outside records and all that, I think the ACC is the best college basketball conference. So we've been fortunate to be in two great conferences, and we've really made the adjustment now to the ACC. It's really been good for all of our programs, really good for football and basketball. So we're happy where we are, and it's a very tough, difficult conference, and that prepares you. You know, we struggled in the conference three of the last 6 years, and we got to the Sweet 16 one year and the Final Four in two of the other years. So I think the conference prepares you to play the best teams in the country, and it gets you ready.
You know, when you were in the Big East and then when you first came to the ACC, the league was much smaller in terms of number. I mean, eight teams was kind of ideal, and it went to nine and maybe 12, and now it's 15 or 16?
Yeah.
It's more of a conglomerate right now, you know, different sections of the country getting together. Explain that to us.
Well, nine teams is ideal. You play everybody twice, 16 games. I mean, it's a perfect scenario. You get a round robin. You find out who the best team is in the league. When you play in 15, you're not playing everybody twice. It depends where you play somebody some years. Somebody is going to maybe get a little advantage in the schedule some year. It's really hard to balance, but you get a good idea of who the best teams are. And we're at 18 games now, so we're getting closer to playing everybody. And next year we're going to be at 20
wow.
games. So, you know, we'll be playing almost everybody in the league twice. I can't figure out the math right away, but it's obviously you're coming close to playing everybody twice at 20. And it'll be difficult. It's a tough league, but it does kind of get you ready to be the best team you can be at the end of the year. If you're not, you're going to be either good or you're going to be beaten, one or the other.
All right, you're known for three things, probably a lot more than that, but I would nail down three different things. One, you're a great game coach. Two, you're a great recruiter, you and your staff. And then third, you play zone. Why do you play zone? I mean, I've heard the explanation, but I think everybody else would like to hear why you play zone every single game.
Well, we used to play 50-50, 60-40 zone man, depending on the team we had, for many, many years, probably almost 30 years. And it worked. It was good for us. But in the last, I don't know, at least 15, 16 years, we've gone to more zone, and then now we play all zone. And we recruit a little bit for it. You can get away when you don't play man-to-man. You can be a little thinner and longer, because you don't bang with guys in a zone. You play areas, and so it's a little different physicality. So we look for length in recruiting, and we'll take a long guy sometimes that maybe is on the skinny side but can play our zone. So we've evolved into it. It's been good for us. We've changed it. We match up out of it. We have a lot of man-to-man principles out of our zone. So it really is a changing defense. It's not just a straight 2-3. We do some trapping. We do some matching up out of it. So as we've gone to more and more zone, you have to spend more time on it. We didn't used to have to spend as much time on it because it was simpler. But the more complex we've gotten our zone, the more time we have to spend on it in practice. And, you know, your team is going to be a reflection of what you spend the most time on. If you spend the most time on a fast break, you're going to run. If you spend the most time on pressing, you're going to be a pressing team. If you spend more time on your half-court man-to-man, you're going to be a better man-to-man team. We spend more time on our zone and our running game. So we think that's what enables us to be the best team that we can be.
You've taken your team to the Final Four 5 different times. You won a national championship in 2003. Golly, it just seems to me like some of those Final Four teams that you took might have been better than that team that you snuck up on everybody and won the national championship. How do you feel about that?
Well, it was a young team, so we snuck up because our two best players were freshmen. And at that time, in 2003, everybody wasn't playing freshmen. It's, you know, obviously now you have so many programs with heavy freshmen. But at that time, we were really the first freshman-dominated team with Carmelo Anthony, Jerry McNamara, and we had 2 or 3 sophomores as well. That team only had 1 senior, so it was a very young team. But it was a very good basketball team. We knew it as we got into the season that we would have a chance. But we didn't expect the national championship. Sometimes it just comes together. And some years you think you're a little bit better and you get beat in the finals of the regional, or you get beaten in the finals. It's a difficult thing to win those 6 games. I don't care how good you are, you can struggle and have a bad game in the tournament and somebody can beat you. And it's just circumstances. We've had that happen to us, and many teams have. Jay Wright struggled to get to the Final Four. He's a great coach. He was a great coach then. But all of a sudden it clicked, and now he's won 2 national championships. So it's just not that easy to even get to the Final Four, let alone to win the national championship.
I look at the list of some of the list of players that have played for you: Carmelo Anthony, Derek Coleman, Sherman Douglas, Hakeem Warwick, Jerry McNamara. I hate to go on, I'll leave some people out, but the name that jumps out at me and may be one of your favorites was Pearl Washington.
Well, he was a great player, and he was a fun player to watch. You know, he was electric. He could go by anybody, and in fact, when Georgetown had the best defensive team that they've ever had, and when they won the national championship, Pearl just dominated them in the Big East. Finally, he had 29 points, 10 assists, probably 6-7 rebounds, 5 steals, and that was the best Georgetown team, the team that they had that year that won the national championship, with obviously Patrick and all their big guys, and they had great guard play. They had 5 NBA players: David Wingate, Reggie Williams, Patrick, just tremendous team. And Pearl just put on a show against him. He was that kind of player. You couldn't really guard him one-on-one. And he was exciting, you know, in a very humble, quiet guy, but very flashy on the basketball court. He threw a half-court shot in against Boston College to win the game, and he was off the court from half-court. He was already on the way into the locker room when the ball went through the basket. He threw it and just kept running. He said, "Coach, I knew that was in."
You were selected to enter the Naismith Hall of Fame in the year 2005. How does that honor rank with many of the others that you've had?
Well, it's you don't even think about being in the Hall of Fame. You know, you think that's for people like Bill Russell and John Wooden and Larry Bird and Oscar Robertson, those kind of guys. You don't think of it. Not that many coaches really get in. It's a lot more of a Players Hall of Fame, but it's just such an honor to even be considered for the Hall of Fame, and to get in was a tremendous honor. And I feel really lucky because I'm still coaching. Usually by the time you get in there, you're done. So I'm pretty happy to still be coaching too.
You have served, I don't know, probably two, maybe three terms, 4-year terms with Mike Krzyzewski on the coaching the USA team, not only in the Olympics, but some of the world championships. That's a lot of time in the off season. I mean, I don't think people have an appreciation for how much time you're giving to our country and to basketball in general when you take on that kind of responsibility. I know Mike Krzyzewski's been, you and Mike have been very close through the years, and you were his number one assistant. It's probably nice to have a little summer off, and maybe you're not that, don't have that responsibility.
We were together in three Olympics, three world championships, and one U.S., America's Cup championship. So we were together 7 years over a 14-year period, and we usually spent about 30, 40 days a year getting from start to finish with each one of those events. So pretty close to 300 days given over a long period of time. But it was great. I loved every minute of it. You're coaching the best players in the world. The NBA players were unbelievable, terrific to coach. And in truth, you don't have to coach them that much. You just have to kind of manage them. Mike did a great job of that with Jerry Colangelo running the overall USA basketball thing. It was fun to be a part of. You really never thought about it as work because you're getting an opportunity to coach the best players in the world. And you get an appreciation when you're up close to just how good LeBron and Kevin Durant and, Steph Curry, James Harden, Carmelo Anthony. You just get an appreciation for how great those guys are, how competitive they are. And really, the biggest experience out of the whole thing, not one guy cared about what he was getting out of it. Our players don't get paid. They don't get any benefits from playing the Olympics. But, obviously there's some value to their brand and all that. But in reality, they just want to play and they want to win. And they didn't care how many minutes they played, how many shots they got. Guys like Chris Paul and Dwayne Wade, we'll come off the bench. That's not a problem. And that's when they were like runner-up player of the year, those years. So it was a great experience. I just can't describe how great it was to work with those players, the NBA coaches, Mike D'Antoni, Nate McMillan, Tom Thibodeau, Monty Williams, just great coaches. You learn a lot during that experience, and it's helped my coaching here at Syracuse from what I learned being involved with Mike and all those great NBA coaches and the great players. I mean, you talk to Jason Kidd about basketball, you're going to learn something about basketball. And it was a great experience. I would do it again in a heartbeat.
So it kind of follows that, you would – We've got a lot of young coaches, young aspiring coaches want to be head coaches, and they want to move ahead in the profession. So you would advise them if they can get involved at the grassroots level with USA Basketball, it'd be a good step towards helping them in the profession?
Oh, there's no question. Any step along the way. I started out as a court coach and Olympic qualifier back when in the 1980s, and coached many times for USA Basketball as an assistant coach and later a head coach. It's just an unbelievable experience to be able to work with the players in USA Basketball, sometimes with college players and then with the NBA players. It's a great experience. USA Basketball is huge in our country. It's going to be more involved in college basketball recruiting with the new Rice Commission report. USA Basketball will be more involved going forward in the recruiting process as we move forward with the new new rules brought forward from the Rice Commission.
You and I served on the NABC Board of Directors together for maybe two terms. Tell us what you feel about the NABC and its contribution to college basketball. And it's kind of the governing body that works arm-in-arm, hand-in-hand with the NCAA to manage college basketball.
Well, Jim Haney is the director for the last 20-some years, has really improved our relationship with the NCAA office, with the NCAA Tournament Committee, and it's really helped coaches have more of an impact on the game. You know, there's always problems in our game, always things that happen that you wish didn't happen. They're usually not that widespread. They're usually things that can be fixed and make the game stronger down the road. And I think that's what the NABC does. It's an organization of coaches trying to really help the game, to improve the game and to improve coaches and what coaches are doing. It's an imperfect world, the recruiting world, college basketball, college athletics in general. There's always things that need to be better. But the NABC does as much as possible to help our game be a better game, to help college athletics be better.
Landscape of college basketball. Let's talk about that just for a minute. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of up and down, and you know, nothing worthwhile goes up all the time. I mean, there's got to be some setbacks, and on occasion we have that. I think we're looking at stock market right now. You know, thing has gone crazy for a number of months now, and then we had last week. We just had a kind of a downfall there for a day or two, but that's just the way it is. Tell us about the landscape of college basketball from your vantage point.
Well, David, I think sometimes people forget there's 350 some schools with, you know, we're talking 4,000 college players. So are there going to be mistakes made by the players? Yeah, absolutely. Are there going to be mistakes made by coaches along the way? Or an outside influence? It's happened for 100 years. I remember back when I was in college, something was going on at this school or that school. And, you know, I hate to admit it, but that was 50 years ago. And, you know, obviously there's things going on today that we need to correct, that we need to be vigilant about. I think some, you know, outside agents or outside people do try to affect our game. And what we can't have is for coaches to be involved in that. And that's something that we have to look hard at and try to figure out. But our game is still good. There's so many more positives for so many young men and women. 3,500 men, 3,500 women are playing college basketball. And I think the game is in great position. I think college basketball in general is in a great position. Are there things that need to be worked on and fixed? Absolutely. And we have to continue to do that as we move forward.
As we look forward to this season that's fast approaching, I mean, it's right around the corner, how do you see this edition of the Syracuse Orange fitting in not only in the ACC but on the national landscape? And I'm assuming that you're not looking for another to guard, being that you've got a hot commodity there on your campus already?
Well, my son's going to play this year. It's fun coaching him. He's a really good player, good shooter. We have five starters returning, David. So, obviously, when you have five starters back from a Sweet 16 team, everybody's going to be excited. The problem, we weren't very good the first 20 games last year. We got good at the end. So we have to be that team, the team that was at the end of the year, and I think we can be. We've added some freshmen. We've added some really good players, three or four. So last year we were stuck with six guys, and we were fortunate that we made it through and didn't get anybody hurt at the end. But this year we have 10 guys, and we're much better prepared if something happens. So it's an exciting team. We've got good size. We've got a lot of good weapons. But in college basketball today, there's about 20 coaches that are saying the same thing.
Well, they are. But one thing I was telling my wife last night, I said, you know, Jim Boeheim may be the most honest truth teller in the world. When you ask him about his team, if they're going to be bad, he'll tell you. If they're going to be good, he'll tell you. But I think you also have probably you probably watch more live basketball than any coach in the country. You stay up to like 2 in the morning watching West Coast games. Who's going to be good? Who can we look out for this year in terms of the national championship games?
I'm not sure it's a good commendation to say I stay up, but I do that. I don't know. And when you're the only one doing it, there might be something wrong with you. But I like basketball. I like to watch different teams. And my assistant out at Washington, I like to watch Mike Hopkins' team play. He's using our zone. He's done a great job out there. They're going to be very good this year. I like to watch Gonzaga. There, Mark Few is a good, really good friend of mine. I love to watch his team play in St. Mary's and some of those other West Coast schools. So I like to watch those games, and it's not. You know, I vote in the poll, but I don't do it because of that. I just like to see games. And this year, I'll tell you, the country is really. You got some really, really good teams, I think, in our league. Obviously, Virginia's going to be good, and I'll predict right now they're going to have a good tournament coming up. Tony Bennett's a great coach. Duke and Carolina are good again. I think we can be good. But, you know, the Big Ten, Michigan State is really going to be good again, as they have been. Kansas, really good team. Nevada's kind of a sleeper. They came on last year. They got everybody back. They're going to be really good. But, you know, those are just a few. You look at Tennessee, Rick Barnes got everybody back. Auburn, the SEC looks very strong this year. I think our league will be strong. But, you know, Kansas State had a really good run in the tournament last year. They got everybody back. So you look around, you can just keep talking. And you bring up another team that will be good. You know, LSU is going to be really good. They've got some really good young players. So it's really, obviously, Villanova lost a lot, but they'll be good again. So right there, we're talking 9 or 10 teams that I think could be in the Final Four, could be Final Four worthy teams without really thinking about it that much. So it'll be a great year in college basketball, great regular season, and probably an even better tournament.
Right now, the rage of college basketball and football really is the transfer thing. I mean, you've got kids transferring without laying out now, and you've got the fifth year transfers, you know, going from one school to the other to get the alleged master's degree. You know, how do you feel about that?
You know, it's tough. I think it's good that kids have the ability to go someplace. I think it hurts the smaller schools when they develop a player and then all of a sudden he goes to play at a big school. And what really happens in a lot of those cases, David, if you track them, the kid doesn't do that well. You know, he averages 17 at a smaller school, and it's a big jump, and they don't do that well when they make that transition. But I like kids to have some freedom. I do. I think the problem with letting every kid transfer and play right away, which people have talked about, is, you know, you get a kid a little upset, he just packs his bags and goes home. I think the football thing really opened my eyes, the four games, and then you can transfer. You know, I thought it was a great idea, but now I see all these kids play three or four games and then they just transfer and they didn't lose that year. And so I don't know. I just think it's I have two emotions, two different opinions about the transfer rule. I like it that kids can kind of play. I almost wish it's probably not doable, but if we had a kid that wanted to transfer and he was going to go someplace, and I said, you know, go ahead, you play right away, and that school said, okay, we'll play him right away, you know, I don't think that's that bad of an idea. The problem is you might lose six guys at once, and if you let them play right away, you wouldn't have a team. So it's a difficult problem. They've studied it. They've looked at it, and all the different committees came up with the idea that, you know, the fifth year is okay. I'm not in favor of it, but it's there. It helps those fifth-year guys. But if you transfer normally, you have to sit out a year. And people always compare it to a coach can leave and doesn't have to sit out. It's not a comparison. There's 12 players on a team and one coach. You know, if six or eight guys leave to play right away, you wouldn't have a team wherever that school was. But it's a difficult topic. And I've had, you know, when kids transfer, I think sometimes it's good for them. And I think we've had kids transfer in, and the year sitting out has really helped them. They've gotten better. Mike Benajay came in here from a transfer and he wasn't ready. He wasn't really ready to play. He worked hard on his game and he had a great career here for us. So I think transfers are good, but I think the sit out option is something that's just better for the game and for kids in general.
Outside of basketball, the primary area of support for the college basketball coaches is that movement called Coaches Versus Cancer. Yeah. And no, I don't think there's a program or a coach in the country whose program and university supports that more than Syracuse, Jim Boeheim, and his lovely wife, Julie. Let's kind of close with that. Tell us a little bit about that.
I think that everybody in college coaching has a responsibility to give back to their community and to something like Coaches Versus Cancer or their community. Mike Krzyzewski raises huge amounts of dollars for Duke, for the medical school, for his mother's wing there. And all coaches raise money for something. We picked Coaches Versus Cancer and raised a lot of money for it. And now we raise money for kids in general and for cancer research. And, you know, Mike Bray and Phil Martelli and Fran Dunphy around the country have done great jobs. And they've really pushed the limit to get high schools involved, to get referees give money to Coaches Versus Cancer, a lot of money. And, you know, it's hard to say nice things about referees, but they've done a great job raising money for Coaches Versus Cancer. So it's a great thing. We all should do it. We all should be involved in it. And, you know, my wife has done most of the work, and I'm fortunate for that. But she's helped raise millions of dollars for cancer research and kids in our area. So that's what we all should be doing. We have a great platform. We need to all get involved. We try to get young coaches doing this. It's a great platform. It's more rewarding for me than some of the wins that we have. It's just great to see the results from helping kids and putting basketball courts in and putting computers in boys and girls clubs. I mean, those things are tremendous to be able to do that. And we do it because we have great fans. They give us money. They give us $1 million a year here through our different events we run that we can give back in the community. And without those fans, you couldn't do that. So we're very fortunate. I'm very lucky to be doing something like this for well over 50 years. I was hoping, you know, when we get into this coaching business, David, we hope to make it through like a couple years, don't we?
Amen. Amen.
And to still be doing it here after 50-some years is you got to be pretty lucky. I've been very lucky.
Well, I want to say thanks to all those that have listened to our first podcast for the year, and thanks for tuning in to the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast, and to you, Jim Boeheim, you're a real champion. Thanks for taking some time to be with us as well and get a new year started. Good luck to you and your Orange this season. And to learn more about the NABC, visit nabc.com.